Oh, hi. What are you doing here?
Me?
Yeah.
I don't know. I just kind of not doing anything today.
Me either.
Nothing special today? It's not a special day at all?
No, it's just a Thursday.
Wait, there is something today.
What?
Well, it's 2 days after the anniversary of JFK's assassination, so...
Oh, yeah.
I always like to celebrate 2 days after the assassination. Just specifically 2 days after.
Did that happen on the 21st?
Yeah, 21st of November of 1996.
Well,
1963! That is what I said. I did not say 1996.
Well, yeah, that's what I heard, too.
November 22nd, 1963. I'm sorry, I got it twice wrong.
Fake fan of JFK assassination. I did want to talk to you about something, though.
What?
It's something really important about today. People are saying that Beep the Meep isn't real. And I think you and I both know this is a conspiracy that reaches,
yes, of course,
to higher and higher levels of government, and we have to put a stop to it. Also, I found this tape. Did you get that tape too? It said that we both got tapes.
I got that tape, which in fact contains evidence that Beep the Meep is real.
Yeah, but there's also another tape that said it has, like, it says PW 1963. Did you get that one, too?
Oh, that's... I saw that one.
Yeah.
I think that one also has proof Beep the Meep is real.
I mean, every tape does. It's yes. What you're talking in Beep school. But I feel like... Do you want to play it? I don't know.
Yeah, why not? Nothing special today. 1 day after the 60th anniversary of JFK assassination.
Yeah. So, yeah. I got my tape player. Let's put it in and see what happens. It says here it might be a recording of a radio show from 1963. I don't know.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, play on, player.
Play on, player. Television show. It's called Doctor Who.
Indeed.
Did you see this fine television program?
I watched it on my very own black and white television at home, and I thought, you know what would make this television show much better?
What?
If there was some kind of radio program that conversed with me about the show as it happened.
On the wireless, of course.
As if it was watching along with me, and I thought, what a wonderful idea. And so we took it to the BBC, and now we're here. We are producing Potter Who Cast.
Mm-hmm.
It is, of course, 1963.
Yes.
That is the date it is in. We are in.
Of course, that jolly old fellow... John F. has left us.
Spoke to be murdered but one day ago.
Yes, the anniversary.
Well, actually, we are talking about the entirety of the first story of Doctor Who. So that means it was actually a couple of weeks ago, yes.
Because as you well know, this four-part serial aired from November 23rd to December 14th, 1960. Sorry, I had something caught in my throat there. That's better. It was broadcast on November 23rd to December 14th of this year, 1963.
Yes.
And I did hear that the jolly writers were C.E. Weber and one Anthony Corburn.
I'm sure Auntie Coburn will never generate.
Wonderful much. Man. Yes. A yes, wonderful man. I had the pleasure of speaking to him, and he said, I hope in 60 years my grandchild makes a fuss about this. Mm-hmm. And I said, what are you talking about, Anthony? And he said, it'll make sense in 60 years. I suppose that's the kind of mind you want working for a show about time travel.
Of course. And threatened by Wars Hussein. Now, on the show, we are going to do a very, very fashionable thing and give you just a bit of the old character of the program. Is called
the summary.
Gist. Yes, the gist, the summary.
Well, you should call it a summary. I think
the summary.
I think summary is a much better name.
Yes, of course. There are these two school teachers named Ian and Barbara, and they're concerned about their student, Susan Foreman, who exhibits strange behaviors, I must say, and appears to live in a junkyard. One night they decide to follow her home, and they find a blue police box, which, of course, we use every day. But this one seems to be throbbing with energy, and this strange old man who calls himself a doctor, who is apparently Susan Foreman's grandfather, don't you know? He shows up, and Susan reveals she's inside the box. And they go inside, these three charming young adventurers, and they discover that the box is a spaceship. And not only is it a spacecraft, like from the creepy crawlies on the movie screen, it's bigger on the inside.
Whoa.
This doctor
what
fellow...
A concept.
What a concept. What a concept. These two people, the doctor and Susan, are from the future. And they are in exile from their home planet. Ian, the dashing young hero, attempts to break free, but in doing so, squabbles over the little controls and it sends the ship, which Susan has labeled the TARDIS, back in time. They go back to caveman times. And there is a tribe called the Tribe of Gum. And they're having a leadership crisis with Cal, who was sent in from a different tribe, and Zah, who they are, apologies, I've lost my place in my notes. They are fighting over who should be their leader. The idea of creating fire is central to this conflict. Cal kidnaps a doctor, having seen him light a match to light his pipe. The others go and they try to rescue him, but they too are captured and they're put in the Cave of Skulls, which is full of, well, skulls. And they're later freed by an elderly cavewoman named Old Mother, who is murdered by Cal, and Cal frames Zah. Zah and his wife, Her, go out to find the people. Travelers, but Zah is attacked by an animal. They save Zah, although the doctor wants to kill him with a rock. And they bring him back to the tribe and they expose Cal for the traitor that he is. They drive him away from the tribe, but the tribe, although thankful, want the doctor and his friends to be new members of the tribe, so they imprison them in the Cave of Skulls. Cal breaks back in and attempts to kill Zah, but he sees the fire that Ian has lit and is mesmerized before he fights Zah, but Zah kills him with a rock. Susan discovers, and apologies for my language here, Susan discovers that putting a skull on some fire looks metal as fuck, and they put four of them together and escape, scaring the cavemen and allowing them to escape back to the ship, just about though. As they leave, the doctor says, well, we cannot go back to 1963 because the ship is very erratic, you know? And they arrive on the jungle planet and they check the radiation meter and it says the levels are fine, but once they leave, the meter goes up to critical. They are in danger. But that is all we have seen. Now, I wish to talk to you.
Yes.
How you feel about this particular
temporal anomaly? Temporal anomaly. Temporal anomaly.
Well, of course, this is the first time I'm seeing it. I have not seen it before because there is no such thing as home media for me to watch this. But the first time I watched this, I thought, you know, the first episode so good, and then the other three so boring. This time, not so much. This time I was a little bit more interested in the other three episodes. I think it's maybe because I know that there's like 11 part serials coming up, so I'm kind of like, oh, it's only 4 parts. Oh, thank God, let's go. Mm-hmm. But I feel like it's surprisingly atmospheric. You know, mm-hmm. it's surprisingly mm-hmm. like simple and scary, and it works despite all of its faults.
Mm-hmm.
Or should I say, despite everything that it has working against it?
Mm-hmm.
The thing that really shocked me the most was that, like, there's a character arc for the Doctor in this one, right? Like, there's mm-hmm. he starts off as like this absolutely anti-human, prickly person,
mm-hmm.
and by the end, he's like, "Oh no, let's work together." By the end, there's that moment where Ian. Where somebody asks, like, you are the leader of your tribe, and he goes, no, he is the leader. And he points at the Doctor, and it's like, oh, like they're recognizing each other, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty fun. That's pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
I liked it. Yeah, so this time I had a much bigger blast watching it. I also think it is so well directed. There's so many moments here where I was like, wow, that is really good for 1963. That is mm-hmm. really good.
Mm-hmm.
I think the only part that made me go, you know, oh, this is a serial, is when they get back into the Cave of Skulls. I'm like, are we really, guys? Are we back to this cave? Jesus Christ. Please, just let them get out of this cave.
It's the Cave of Skulls.
It's the Cave of Skulls, which is why I don't understand why they, when they go in and they see more skulls, they're like, oh, it's like, what? Like, isn't that the name of this cave?
It's the purpose of the cave. Maybe it was called the Cave of Skulls before they put skulls in there, and they were like, oh, well, that fits. I do agree that I think ultimately, like, it's quite atmospheric, but like, there's some problems with the script and stuff like that. Like, they're kind of constantly back and forth of like, we gotta go back to the Cave of Skulls. We just came from the Cave of Skulls. We gotta go back to the Cave of Skulls. Another part that I think is what we'll get to another problem. Another part as well is that this isn't really their problem. It kind of is a problem that they cause, but it's not really their problem. The people who play Cal and Zah look so similar at points. I was like,
yes, which person is this? They do. When Zah comes back into the cave and like to talk to them, I thought that's Cal. Like, how did Cal? But it took me a second to realize. Mm-hmm. Oh no, actually, that is Zah. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I feel like the whole central conflict of the tribe is really captivated me this time. I think the big difference is that this time I was like more willing to engage with the show as it exists, as opposed to being like, this is slow and different than some imaginary revival that hasn't happened yet. But this time I was like, okay, let's engage this on its own terms. Let's like actually sit down and watch it. And I think once you do that, and once you like accept that it's going to be different, you open yourself up. There's so many little moments there, like when the Doctor's like, there's no blood on this knife. This knife is mm-hmm. bloody. You killed this old woman. Or when the daughter of her, I think is his name. She's like, oh, it's weird. She looked at me the way a mother looks at a baby, even though I am not her child.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, oh, they don't know what kindness is. That was so fascinating to me personally.
Mm-hmm.
And I also very much, my favorite part of this entire episode, without a doubt, had to have been when Zah is hurt and is figuring out how to get him back. And the Doctor grabs a stone because he's like, oh no, we gotta get out of here. We gotta go back to the ship, blah, blah, blah. The Doctor grabs a stone and he's ready to murk that guy. He's like, I am 3 seconds away from killing this person. And then Ian grabs his hand and then he goes, oh, I was just gonna get him to draw the way to the TARDIS.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's it. They never bring it back up, but it's such a powerful moment where you're like, this guy's like, I gotta get out of here ASAP.
Mm-hmm.
Fuck. Yeah. Let's kill this guy.
Yeah, I on the note of the direction, the the fight that they have when it's Cal and Zah, I think that's shot and edited so well. It's so cinematic. Mm-hmm. It's so atmospheric. It's so
the fight.
Cuts to like Caroline Ford and like William Russell just watching on.
Yes.
Yeah, it's great.
Yes. Absolutely. That's I also like that fight. I think again, there's so many moments here where there's like little directing choices where you're like, this was made in 1963 for a television show, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's like there's like a literal like Jonathan Demme straight down the camera close up in the first episode. And it's so weird. And, I mean, not weird like a bad way, but it's so shocking. You just kind of get knocked out of it. And it's like, wow. I feel like the way they shoot the flashbacks in the first episode showing Susan saying all those things, it's really good too. Really fascinating. I think in a whole, like the thing that really shocked me about this episode is just how well directed it is. You know, I feel like we have this image of these brand new TV shows, Doctor Who. We have an image of it being slow and like very play like and not at all cinematic because of the constraints of the limit of the time of the budget. But you watch this and it's like, nah, that doesn't feel like that. It really does feel like they're okay. Let's do this. Let's do this shot. Let's do a different shot. They really managed to make a lot. I kind of realized by the end of like episode 3 that the jungle felt so much larger than it probably actually was, you know?
Mm-hmm.
The jungle was probably one room, but they somehow made it feel like so much bigger.
Mm-hmm. I will say that there is a weird temporal thing with this tape that you listen to. We know we listen to a tape that allows us to see into the future sometimes and also change their accents to other people's accents. But you can, you know, we're time energy. Another line that I like, it's one that that I think definitely will be reintroduced by a Scottish writer in the year 2015, is fear makes companions of us all. I really like that line. You know, people, and I'm getting this from the future as well, people will often express their shock that Barbara is a conservative voter. She's a conservative party supporter. Mm-hmm. But when you factor in that her whole thing was, let's follow this child home and bother her and see what she does in her private life.
I never caught that. Right.
I think maybe it makes sense when you look through that lens. We should talk about the opening episode of this four-part story. This mild curiosity in the junkyard. It's as atmospheric as the other ones. The opening where the policeman walks past and they go into the junkyard.
It's such an atmospheric opening shot. Like, I know we use that word, and there is the fact that like we are talking from a position of we have seen 60 years of the show gone by. So that shot has the imbued like meaning and power that it comes from being the first shot of a 60-year old show. But at the same time, it is just a really fucking good shot. Like, I started this and I was like, okay, I'm going to watch this thinking I have never seen Doctor Who before. I was hooked. Like, from the moment you see that first shot of the policeman walking past the police box, and it's just like, why is that police box in there? What is that doing in there? And the fact that this is one of those, I feel like a lot of people, when they watch black and white stuff, they feel like, I can't really connect because it's black and white and it's shot differently. But here I think this is a situation where the black and white really helps it feel so much more alive. And because specifically they're depicting a very like claustrophobic world, you know, the cave, everything is so like constrained, you know. And so the black and whiteness of it all helps. I think, for example, that whole sequence with the fight at the end of episode 4 doesn't work if they are in full color. And you can see, you know, I can see all the end of the set. In that fight, the cave looks enormous. It all looks so much bigger than it actually was. And there's this effect that happens, and I've never seen it happen in... I haven't really seen a lot of, like, old color TV, but when they light the fire for the first time, there's, like, this very brief black spot within the fire.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just like, wow. It really made the fire seem like... And fire is a thing you've seen so many times, and I like the little line where they go, like, in our tribe, everyone knows how to make fire, so fire isn't important. But the fact that, like, it really made the fire seem like a big deal. In fact, it takes them until episode, like, 4 to make fire, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it's 3 episodes of, like, fire, 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 and then they make it. And even though it's something you've seen so many times, the way they shoot it and the fact that it's black and white television really helps them make you feel like, oh, this is a big deal. Yeah, this is a really big deal.
Mm-hmm. It is, yeah. I think it's just marvelous. I do think maybe, you know, it's very easy to say that maybe if they had, you know, started off with them going into space rather than going back in time as their first thing. Although, you know, the whole thing with it being the caveman first is because of, you know, production issues.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. It's I just love how, like, you know, it's so sincere. It's so, like, you know, it's so confident in what it's doing, you know, even when, mm-hmm. like, you know, it can drag, even when, you know, you get, like, this, the whole kind of, you know, back and forth, it's still so confident being like, you know, we're like, you should pay attention to us because we're, like, you know, we're here, we're
yeah,
gonna be important, you gotta listen to us for, or watch us for, you know, next 4 weeks, and then, you know, you're hooked.
And also so many spots in here where they could feel with some kind of, like, I don't know, some kind of audio-based box set story.
Mm-hmm.
So many little lines where they can add all these. But yeah, it's such a very confident episode. I mean, there's stuff missing from the show because they just haven't come up with it yet, you know? Mm-hmm. They haven't come up with Time Lords or Regeneration. They just haven't come up with all of it. So... But at the same time, it doesn't feel like it's there. You look at it and you're like, yep, there it is. That's Doctor Who. Like, mm-hmm. I can show this to somebody and be like, I'll still have to be like, hey, this was from the 60s, okay? You got to keep that in mind. But at the same time, I can be like, but that's Doctor Who. That's mm-hmm. the show. There really is nothing. It is pound for pound one of the most confident TV pilots I've ever seen. Where you're like, the show knows what it wants and knows what it's going to do it. And by God, it's going to keep doing it for 60 years to come.
Mm-hmm. Although, from what I understand, the only times you ever see Cal and Zah and her will be in the pages of a magazine devoted to this television program. In a comic,
it'll never work.
It'll never work. But this comic strip where a younger bow tie wearing person who says that the Doctor, I don't know how that works, meets Ian and Barbara, and they're chased by these cavemen who are now imbued with the power of, like, sun gods who are aliens.
I would actually like to see that. If I could go into the future 60 years and say, mm-hmm. work for some man whose name rhymes with musty tea rabies, I would do a story with the Tribe of Gum. I feel like that would be kind of interesting,
mm-hmm.
to, well, like, go back and see the effect. Because, like, the way this ends is surprisingly, like, dour.
Mm-hmm.
They just leave, and it's like, yeah, they just leave, and it's over. And now this guy doesn't have fire, even though he just got it after all this time. And it's like, if he had just fucking, just, like, listened to them, he probably would have learned how to make fire and would have gotten it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Although, I don't know if you have been allowed to do that in 60 years time. I have a feeling there'd be something stopping you, something that likes to talk about conspiracy theories. What else would talk about? It's quite Shakespearean. I think it's really aiming for that kind of, you know, a lot of shows, mm-hmm. like, aim for that kind of, like, faux Shakespearean,
right? Yeah. Thing.
And this is, like, really, like, amping up. I really love the performance of one William Hartnell. I think he's so good, especially in the first episode when he's like, you know, he's playing around with the two school teachers. He's trying to throw them off. In that you mentioned that scene where he's like, this knife has no blood. He's so extra. He's very catty. I find in this, he's like, you know, he's being like, you know, so dramatic in his movements. He's like swapping. He's like throwing the knife around. He's being very sarcastic and snappy, and you know, he's really kind of, you know, he's up for fighting these cavemen. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I have the meat and the stick and the piece of skin. Za is the original Arby's because he has the meat.
Because he has the meat.
Mm-hmm,
and he's really good.
And the piece of skin. Speaking of Za, of course, seen to the future, originated the role of Shelley the Machine Levine in Glengarry Glen Ross, which is quite crazy.
I also found a really funny fact that I apparently the original names for the companions were going to be Bridget, Lola, and Cliff. I love that actually. And please, we want Bridget, Lola, and Cliff. They should have a moment where, you know, they go back to the 60s and they see people who from behind look like the first Doctor, Susan, Barbara, and Ian. And then they turn around and they goes, yes, it is I, Bridget, Cliff, and Lola.
It would be crazy if they ever made two movies based on this television program with Peter Cushing as Doctor Who and someone else as Susie Who.
Yeah, before we wrap up, I just want to say, I just found out that apparently C.S. Lewis and Aldous Huxley both died on the same day as JFK, which to me is insane to think about. And they all died before Doctor Who came on the air. They're all like, we gotta go, guys. I'm out.
We've seen Beep the Meep. We can't live the same time.
Somebody went up to Aldous Huxley and said, yeah, you wrote Brave New World. Well, let me tell you about this TV show. It was like, no, I gotta go.
Hey, is this Lee Harvey Oswald? You're free next week.
I gotta get out of here. The only way to do that is to kill the president. You know, it's so funny. So there's so many stories that they go back to like November 23rd, 1963. Mm-hmm. And it's like, by now there should be a time lock around that fucking day. It's like, nobody go here anymore. Stop. There's too many people in this place. Okay, let's wrap it up.
Temporal anomaly. Temporal anomaly. Temporal anomaly.
Well, thank you for listening to that television program, or radio show, I should say. The BBC. Yes.
The BBC.
Apologies if you heard any strange fuzz during the recording. It may have been something to do with their clocks. Their clocks start to turn fast forward quite quickly, and strange things happened to do with time. We don't know what happened, but thank you very much, and yes, we will see you again next month for some more recapping of this television program.
Recapitulating.
Yes.
Unless for some reason, and in fact I think they should do this, the BBC decides to destroy all tapes of this program. I think they should do this, of course. Yes. Destroy every tape. Then when you get to 1970s, stop destroying tapes. And then and they just keep going, why do we destroy all these tapes?
A man named Ian will spend most of his life living off the fact he jumped into a skip to save these. But yes, of course. Jolly ho, pip pip, and see you again. We'll be right back.
Whoa, that was a weird tape.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
That was a really weird...
You know, that was one of my grandparents, and I think they hated it, and I'm going to make sure the BBC never gets this tape unless they pay me £20,000.
Oh, yeah. I actually did.
This is not a reference to anything.
I stopped listening to the tape. I will admit, I got distracted by there was a cool dog outside. It might have been Beat the Meep, who is real. And if you don't believe that, you're not paying attention, you know? Anyway, let's go and prepare for whatever. It's Wars and Mars next. Let's go prepare for that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And not, it's Wars and Mars. And there's nothing going on in the air in 2 days.
Oh,
apart from the celebration of 3 days after JFK.
Yes, that's what it was, the JFK 3 day celebration.
The 3 days, 3 days after JFK assassination celebration.
Yes,
of course. Hosted by Jimmy Fallon and James Corden.
Mm-hmm. That's crazy, Jimmy.
Okay, believe it. We're going to. This is not what it sounds like. Oh, I can't believe it. We are 3 days after JFK got murdered.
Hey, that's crazy, James. we recorded all that by accident. Oh no, that's embarrassing.
Oh no.
I'll throw it on Thursday for JFK, you know, just remember JFK. Let's go prepare for the next thing. This is my chair that makes fart noises. I'm not farting. I keep saying I'm not farting. It's my chair. Okay. Bye.
Bye-bye.